start hour number two by having a conversation with an NFL analyst for CBS Sports. Nearly 30 years as an executive with the Oakland Raiders, Big Three chairman of the board, author of You Negotiate Like a Girl, part of the LA Sports and Entertainment Commission Board. She is a good friend of the program. She is Amy Trask. Amy, it is so good to have you back. There is a lot to talk about, Amy, but before we get into any of this, how are you and everybody around you doing, Amy, in this most unusual of times?
Unusual is a good word to use. I often use surreal. We are well. Thank you for asking. I hope that you and yours are well as well. And I am not overstating this when I tell you, when I get to join you on your show, I am like a teenage girl around her movie star crush. Not that I'm stalking you. Not that I'm going to be creepy with you. I'm just that excited.
You're silly, Amy. Amy Trask is joining us, and I appreciate you saying that very much. And the feeling is quite mutual. It is always great to have you on the show, Amy, and to hear your voice. Now, you've been around the NFL for a long time, and you mentioned that it's surreal, it's unusual. Have you ever seen anything that would approach or approximate the offseason that we've had, the way it's been impacted by the pandemic? Is there anything that even compares to this?
Nothing, absolutely nothing during my years in the league. Now, of course, I wasn't in the league during a wartime or anything of that nature. And yes, I know that succinctly, no, not during my years in the league.
All right. So, Amy, as the CEO of a football team, what would be your number one priority throughout an offseason like this one?
Protecting all who are involved with the organization, protecting the fans, doing all I could to keep everyone safe and sound.
We are talking to Amy Trask. You know, Amy, as you write, there is unlikely to be a vaccine or a universally effective therapeutic by the time NFL camps are scheduled to open up next month. So if camps go ahead, it seems reasonable to expect that there are going to be modifications. Why don't we start with the creation of distancing in the locker room and around the facility? How will teams go about doing that?
Well, Jim, it's far more than the locker room, as you just referenced. It's throughout the facility. People are focused on the locker room, but there's the locker room, the shower areas, the training room, equipment areas, meeting rooms, film rooms, breakout rooms, areas where the players are eating. There's usually a buffet breakfast, a buffet lunch. There are smoothie bars. And yes, I know they're really protein shake bars, but I used to call them smoothie bars.
Right.
There are umpteen places in the facility that require some distancing, as the league is indicating it will require, not just locker rooms. Now, look, a lot of this can be handled. Locker rooms that aren't big enough to accommodate the distancing the league wishes can be supplemented with temporary locker facilities. Tents can be erected in parking lots, on the sidelines, outside practice fields. There can be accommodations, but they will have to be made.
Amy Trask, NFL analyst for CBS Sports, is joining us. You know, maybe you make those allowances, maybe you work your way through it, but Amy, what about the field itself? As an example, there's a story from shortly after you started in the league. You were on the sideline of a practice. The play was coming towards you, and some team partners said, football is a contact sport. A player said, quote, no, Amy, it's a collision sport. So knowing that, how in the world do you create distance on a football field during practice?
You cannot create distance. Offensive linemen, defensive linemen are inches apart. And if a defensive lineman is in the neutral zone, and I won't even get started on that right now, he's even closer to the offensive lineman. A man coverage corner is going to be on top of a receiver. One hopes if he's playing man well. So you cannot distance. What the league is looking into is the ability to create some sort of a larger, bigger protective shield to go in the front of helmets. Right now, we've all seen that there can be shields that go down to about nose level. Players need to get permission to use those. The league is evaluating whether or not there can be some sort of shielding that covers the entire face. I don't know how that will work.
Amy Trask is expertly breaking this down for us. She's an NFL analyst for CBS Sports, nearly 30 years as an executive with the Oakland Raiders. So, Amy, the expectation is there will be frequent testing as well as temperature checks for players. But at the same time, you know, players often do not acknowledge injuries or illnesses when they're competing for jobs. So how do you eliminate the risk that somebody fighting for a job is still going to speak up if they do have symptoms?
Jim, that's a phenomenal point, and there's two issues with that. There's number one, the player who won't speak up if he's experiencing symptoms, because that's the mentality of players. I'm fighting for a job. I'm fighting for a roster spot. I'm good to go, coach. I'm good to go. Players are trained over many years to ignore or set aside or not acknowledge that they're not 100%. So there will be those who fall into that. But there's also going to be people who don't realize they're experiencing symptoms, because so much of what is done to accommodate for the injuries and the banging and the bumps and the bruises sustained during practice at camp, the medication taken, you know, even if it's as simple as ibuprofen, and we all know it's stronger than that in many cases, will mask those symptoms. So there may be a player who would speak out of concern for his teammates and say, hey, I feel like I have a fever, or hey, I have these symptoms, that won't even be experiencing those symptoms because of the medication being taken to address on-field injuries.
Such a good point. Amy Trask is joining us. You've also coined the term, Amy, in-bubbled. What does that term mean?
I'm so proud of that, Jim. I actually invented a word that is now in the Urban Dictionary.
I
walked
it.
Into the room where my husband was sitting when that happened, dropped the mic, and went straight to the freezer and made myself the biggest ice cream sundae. And I have called every one of my nieces and nephews and said, your aunt is in the Urban Dictionary.
That's the best.
In-bubbled is the word I'm using for the concept of placing teams or placing a league in a bubble, as is being contemplated by other sports. I explained in an article for The Athletic that I don't think that's feasible when it comes to the NFL because of the sheer magnitude of people that would have to be in bubbles.
Right. This is not like the NBA. The NBA is attempting to do so, but with much smaller rosters, and even that bubble is permeable. Like, for instance, Amy, take the Orlando Pride of the NWSL. They withdrew from the NWSL Challenge Cup after a group from that team went to a local bar and then tested positive. So in the NFL, what kind of conversations would there be between the league and the Players Association, as well as teams and their players, about what is acceptable or not away from the facility? What would those conversations be like?
That's another fantastic point you make, Jim, because anything that is done has to be agreed upon between the league and the Players Association. They're parties to a collective bargaining agreement. This is governed by the National Labor Relations Board. I mean, they are parties to a labor agreement. And as such, the league cannot unilaterally impose a change in working conditions. It must be agreed upon by the parties. Now, that said, irrespective of whether it must be agreed upon, and it has to be, it should be agreed upon. If ever there is a moment in time where the league and the union should be acting collaboratively and as partners with the best interest of the players and the game at heart, this is it. They need to find a solution together.
Yes, certainly baseball did not do that, but the NFL's got an opportunity to do so. Earlier today, Amy, you tweeted, quote, as the NFL evaluates if and to what extent it can safely have fans this season, it must consider the issue of domes. Some have retractable roofs, a few do not. And if it decides some fans may attend, but not in enclosed stadia, do those teams use alternate sites or exclude fans? Lay that out for me. How big of a concern is that?
I don't know how concerned the league will be with this, but I think it needs to pay attention to it. Let's say the league decides to go forward with X percentage of fans in each stadium, complying, of course, with local rules. So let's say local rules are you can have, you know, 50% of the stadium full, or 30% or 25%, whatever that number is. Well, we're learning that there's a difference between being in an enclosed facility and an outdoor facility. So the league should evaluate whether those same standards should apply to enclosed facilities as to outdoor facilities. And if the league decides, you know what, it's one thing if a dome has a retractable roof, fair enough. But for those few domes that don't have retractable roofs, we don't want any fans at all, or we want far fewer fans. Those teams will then have to decide, do they seek out a college facility or a municipal facility or another facility in their area in which to play? Or do they simply play with less fans or no fans to stay in an enclosed building? And I want to be very careful to note, I'm not a scientist. I don't try to be a scientist. These are things for scientists to figure out. Jim, I barely passed high school chemistry. So I don't know the answer to this. I just know it must be considered.
We are talking to Amy Trask. I appreciate that fact, too. So, Amy, for instance, the Hall of Fame game has been canceled. We know the league is doing its very best to forge ahead, but that game has been canceled, and now we think ahead of the preseason. If there is a reduction in the number of preseason games, how significant would that be in terms of preparation for teams for the season, as well as revenue for an organization?
Well, I have thought for a number of years that there should be a reduction in the number of preseason games anyway. So one can look at the silver lining in this and say it's a beta test for reducing the number of preseason games and how that will work. This year, far more complicated because you have to figure out how you're going to travel as a team, what protocols you're going to put in place, how you're going to address being the home team, what you're going to do with visiting team locker rooms, which in many, many, many instances are intentionally designed to be cramped and crowded because the theory is, and I'm not ratting anyone out, I'm not saying we might have done this, but you don't want to give your visiting team a magnificent locker room. So all of that's going to be worked out. But you know what? There are people in this country and in this world working out bigger problems. It can be figured out if the league decides to push forward.
I mean, one last thought. Like, in big, big picture, it's one thing to say, like, players are taught to play through things, and players know that if their job depends upon that, they're going to play through it and find a way to get on the field. If we look at the league, and believe me, nobody wants this more than me. I really, really want the NFL to return. I host a talk show. I mean, I want this badly. I need this on some level. But, Amy, when you talk about a sport where the entire culture essentially is, we're assuming a certain risk every day when we come to work, and we strap it on. I mean, this is a different breed of human being, right? From those who play the game, those who coach it. How difficult then, if that's the culture of the thing and it's always been like that, how difficult would it be to embrace and understand the risk that comes along with COVID-19 when there's so much assumed risk across the board for the entire sport every day?
Well, you know, your points that you made are spot on, accurate, and all of that. Couple responses. Rosters are very, very varied. You have men on rosters who aren't even 21 yet. We really drafted men who hadn't yet had their 21-year-old, you know, their 21st birthday. And then they span all the way into, as we're now seeing, their 40s. So some men on the rosters will be going home, if there's no bubble, which I don't believe there can be, to families with young children, with older people in the household. They're maybe going home to people with compromised immunity. So I think the analysis may be different in this instance than it normally is. And remember, even if everything you just said holds true across the board, not only with most players, but all players, you've also got coaches to consider and other necessary game day personnel, some of whom are much older. I mean, there are teams now that have over 20 assistant coaches. Tampa Bay has close to 30, and not all of those are young people. So that has to factor in as well.
Excellent, excellent point. She is an NFL analyst for CBS Sports. Again, spent nearly 30 years as an executive with the Raiders, the Big Three chairman of the board, and author of You Negotiate Like a Girl. Good friend of the program, Amy Trask. Spot on as always, Amy. I appreciate you and our friendship. And great to have you back, Amy. I hope I see you soon.
I hope to see you soon, too, and I love joining you. Thanks for having me, and stay well.
Thank you so much, Amy. Thank you for elevating the conversation and making it so much better. Stay well. Amy Trask.